you know. Now, there's problems, obviously, with lack of resources, et cetera, et cetera. But very often, our optimism is confirmed when it comes to these people that Tracy's talking about, like these Fox idiots. Remember, if you've never watched that stuff, please don't start watching it. It's not worth, it's not even worth your criticism. It's not, but if you, you must, you can check them out and you'll see. I'll never forget Tracy started telling me about it. I started just looking at the thing with the little child. What was his name?
Which one?
The little Cuban child.
Oh, alien?
Yeah. That alien thing. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And what they did, you can count on it. You know, these kind of right-wing idiots will go too far, make fools of themselves, discredit themselves, and alienate thinking people. And that's what they did. I was so happy because they was pumping it up. They were putting that stuff on every day, going all Cuba this, Cuba that, Cuba, Cuba, Cuba. And it's so simple. A child, mother takes them. They die on in transit. Father wants the child to come back home. What's the big deal? Right. And they just clowned and made such idiots of themselves. I'm glad. I'm very happy that they made idiots. I could not have paid them to do a better job.
But it would have been better if, like, see, part of the problem is one, we have a very chauvinistic society where if issues aren't brought home to them, i.e. where they're feeling the pain, often when it's another nation, Yugoslavia, whatever, it's easy for them to just go off into another subject, even when the state and its little allies contradict themselves. So what I'm saying is that Fox News is still a highly respected show amongst the American population, where issues like this should have discredited it in a real thinking population, but the population has been somewhat gumpified down to the point where
how did that happen?
Well, it's happened in on several fronts. I mean, one, you have a situation where the history of this country has had dramatic dividing seeds on race, gender, and special preference towards the ruling elite, economically advanced classes. And this has allowed them to exploit these issues and turn issues which should be relevant in the minds of many people across the spectrum of the working class, but it's dumbed them down. So now you have many right-wingers who have made good movies or documentaries, like, say, on the Waco thing. Mm-hmm. And when I hear them talk in various milieus, they act as if this is the first time this has ever happened. Mm-hmm. The concept of the move house.
Right.
And what happens, because see, what often happens to black people is like the canary in the
mine.
Right. You know, so what they may do to us a decade, 2 decades earlier, they often will do it to the masses of the population down the road.
Right.
But if you are so gripped up in your own little ideology and your own little caste, color, you know, code and all of that, that you can't see that this was a class attack that was happening against the move house, and then they've already got a precedence. Then they're able to smash and attack people who tried to come out and argue against those, i.e. Mumia Abu-Jamal. But you're still blinded by the color thing, so then you end up aligning yourself with the state, the police, to in their attack against Mumia and other dissenting voices. And then lo and behold, boom, they're doing it to you in your neighborhood.
That's right.
Down the road.
That's right.
Well, see, these type of things have helped polarize, demonize portions of the population, and gumpify the population in a way that other countries that are industrialized could only be envious of. I'm talking about the ruling elite class, because they would want the masses of their people as pacified and as confused and as materialistic and so easy just tuned out on or tuned into things like sports so quick, you know. But that's part of the whole gumpification process. And also, there hasn't been a strong enough working class structure that could act independently create its own independent news outlets. In other words, when Fred Douglas and them did basically what we were doing now back in the day, the North Star Printing Press, that was the voice of the abolitionist movement. Well, that should have continued on. That thing should have just continued on to the point where we continue to have a large ear of the masses of people, developed conscious people speaking out of it to give an alternative to what's going on now. But with a lot of the setbacks that have happened, certain contradictions in the working class structure on race and gender lines and stuff like that, we don't have an independent working class voice that reaches the masses in the same way that you see in South Africa. So the working class, by and large, does not have a regular voice, independent voice that it can hear. This is what we're building for now. But this has had a devastating effect on the consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Even someone like me don't know what I should. Even someone like you doesn't know what you should. Like, I just I just found out May Day. Oh, was based on the events that happened in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It always kind of, we had this impression that it was something that happened like in Europe or something else.
Well, it's celebrated in Europe today and not in the United States.
Right.
And by the way, just for the sake of our listeners, because I want to make sure you get, and when I say get, I mean fully comprehend what Tracy's saying here. When we talk about gumpification process, that's a word that we develop, you know, and what it actually we're referring to is the film. There was a film called Gump about this poor fellow who went through all these experiences. But what the movie was really telling people is, it doesn't matter how smart you are, it doesn't matter how rich you are, if you're just a good boy and you just, you know, go along in life, everything will work out for you in the end. And remember, he got the shrimp ship and his buddy Bubba, he gave him half, you know. So that film was a real watershed of American culture. See, and that's when we talk about gumpification, that's what we're referring to. So people understand the head fixing that goes on. Mm-hmm. And boy, have we been fixed as a people, you know.
We have a F E F R I a friend who thinks of himself as a L liberal. He's very, very uncomfortable with what we do with Lover, even though he has a lot of money, and we don't have any. So he, you know, for Frank's birthday, he'll give us $100 for Lover. Yet if we tell him about the content of the stuff we do, he gets really uncomfortable. And, you know, he'll make comments like, well, of course you're having a hard time getting money. People don't want to hear the stuff you're talking about. And he's not kidding, you know. He doesn't want to hear it.
No,
it makes him real uncomfortable. And he thinks he's like, you know, he thinks he knows what's going on.
He does within a certain small circle.
Yeah.
See, that's that atomization process that they put us through. They break us off into individuals, small cliques, families, and we don't really know what each other is doing. And this is the perfect situation for them. Because as we begin to come together, and we will, you can believe me, I don't know what the result is. I wouldn't dare to try to predict what the immediate results is going to be. But they're coming at us so hard now, it's kind of, you know, That's why, once again, our historical optimism is not, it's not a dull, you know, dull-witted kind of, you know, just rah-rah-rah kind of stuff. They won't leave us alone. They're going to make you fight. They're going to make you fight. This, I was thinking about this poor woman in Idaho. I know, I hope the listeners, if you read the papers or something, you may have seen, you had a situation where the lady was arrested for child neglect, felony child neglect. And when she was neglected for child neglect, her husband had died, she was neglected, she was arrested, and the kids decided they were not going to be split up and sent to a foster home. So these six children, they got their weapons out, they sicked their dogs on the sheriff's, and they just said, no, we y'all ain't taking us, to hell with y'all. Well, people should know, here's a follow-up for that story. According to the newspaper of record, this is the New York Times, the mother was freed in the Idaho case. What it was is the judge decided that they did not have sufficient evidence to charge this woman with felony neglect. It's true the house was not clean, that there were, you know, mice in the house and even some maggots, which I don't, you know, I think is rather tragic and is not good. Of course, we don't want to have maggots where we live or where children live. That does not make her someone who does not love her damn children. This is madness, the way these child protective agency people go on and abuse their authority so much. It's terrible. Who can you trust? You know? And but it's just good to see that she's out of jail, and I think that thing is going to take a positive. You know, what it really is about, they like to desensitize us to each other so we don't sympathize. You're white. I'm not worried about what happens to you, because 400 years ago, your ancestors might have enslaved mine. You're from Mexico. What the hell are you doing here taking my job? Blah, 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 blah. They got us going on like that. It's very sad, but they do. But here's a situation where this woman deserved nothing but sympathy. Her husband, they were living on a trust. They had to sell their house because they ran out of money because the husband died of a disease, like multiple sclerosis, was it, James?
Yeah.
I forget exactly what, but he died. So what's the answer? It's very simple. A woman should have been placed on some form of welfare and helped. And also, when people, your loved ones die, people get depressed. And they go into phases where they don't clean up. You get in a funk. You don't do nothing. You know, they want to lock up people like this. What kind of country are we living in, y'all? Come on now. We can do better than this.
As far as some of the liberal contradictions, like you were talking about with your guy's friend, part of that is it's like a fear factor.
That's right.
Because as far as people wanting to really know about these subjects, let's take the case where recently two reporters who got a contract with Fox News to do an expose on Monsanto for Fox News. They did a report. They completed it. They found out very interesting information that not only every person would be interested in if they have a brain, because, you know, this is what they may be consuming. Products from cattle, whether in the form of cheese, milk, or just eating beef in particular, but especially mothers would be concerned about the effects of bovine growth hormones. And what other nations have found found is that the insulin growth factor, when you put BGH into cows, the insulin growth factor proliferates in your bodies, and this is what proliferates cancer cells. Now, this doesn't mean you will get cancer. It just increases your probability of getting cancer. So Monsanto found out about this report coming out by these two reporters. They knew they couldn't challenge it intellectually. So then they threatened Fox, and then Fox comes to them and doesn't just say cut it or cut parts of it, but then they want them to out and out lie. So the reporters refuse to do that.
Good for them.
They get fired. Then they take Fox News to court and win in court. Now, we did a thing, I call it Ventures in Corporate Media Land. And that goes into segments where I know the masses of people would be interested in these topics. but the corporate media structure is not. And this is just not some bad conservatives conspire. Hey, let's keep this stuff out. You know, this is liberals also involved in it, because both ideologies have an alignment and an agreement with the way the modes of corporate capital, financial institutions within this society should be run. And that is based off of the capitalist model. And things that expose the fact that we live in a society that puts capital finance over human life and human health contradict that. And they don't want that stuff out. So there are many liberals and many liberal mothers who would be absolutely thankful if they could have found out that information by these reporters. And that's what liberals like your friend know, that we would be taking them and saying, see, these are the contradictions in having this type of ideology that you have. And there's a fear factor amongst many liberals that they were going to lose their rank, that they'll be walking away from the Democratic Party, the lesser of two evil concept, and into a thing that has more alignment with humanity.
Well, there's also just cowardly, willful blindness plays a role too. You know, some people just would not be able to continue to support and publicize the illusions in this system if they constantly were, you know, being bombarded with basic truth on things like this biogenetic, who's his name, scared me to death. And I probably eat more of it than anybody else and don't even know it. They don't put the labels on the food.
Right. In 1968, Vietnam was CLOSE, close to SI, signing a peace treaty, and Nixon, the thing where Nixon approached them and said that if you don't sign, make this peace agreement now with the Democrats, that we'll offer you a better deal after the election.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that. And so Humphrey lost LBJ was BU, and LBJ was bugging Nixon, so he knew about all this.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the question was, well, why don't you just tell everybody what's going on? But there was that thing where everybody's kind of in it together.
Yeah.
You know? And so even though he was the one that was being screwed,
he
didn't tell
you
anybody.
Know, another example, just like that, very similar, is the vice president, Mr. Gore, who ran for president.
Right, exactly.
Clearly, there were some very serious irregularities in the election processes. Not just Florida, but throughout the South, turning people away from the polls, claiming that people had criminal records when, in fact, there was no fact that they had ever broken the law. This was, I mean, it was kind of bad. I found it personally very depressing, to be honest myself. But I noticed they sent Jesse Jackson out there, and he went to Florida. They had a demonstration of 50,000 people. That's a fairly large demonstration. It looks like there's something could have happened. And the Democratic Party made a political decision to pull him back.
Right.
To pull Jackson out of that situation. And subsequently, Mr. Gore was shamefully, I think, I don't know the word, I don't want to say cooperative, forgiveful, or whatever. It's just that he did not want people to get hip to the system as a whole. He said, look, that's it, that's enough.
Right.
It's getting out of hand. And it's better that if even if I don't win, don't let's not have people opening their eyes to the nature of this situation here.
Well, he made his logical alignment with the system in the state. If you look at the fact that when some of the black people in the, you know, black Congress or whatever they call themselves.
Black caucus.
Stood up and wanted some support either from him or some of the senators, because they needed one person to say, okay, let's do an investigation. None of them did it. And then Gore gaveled them down. This was very similar to the Compromise Act in the 1800s, when there was a deal made over some of the voting aspects against the Democrats and Republicans over, okay, we'll pull out of the South. We'll pull our
troops out of the South. Right.
Let you guys just wreak havoc on the Negroes. And then you go ahead and let our guy become president. So you have that type of consolidation in amongst the two fractions of the bourgeois party. And they end up defending the state.
Yes. S. We saw A. M. O. A movie about...
It was about that period.
Okay.
Was it Freedom Road?
Yeah.
With Muhammad Ali.
Excellent film. Excellent film, actually. You know who wrote it? Howard Fast. One of the guys who was blacklisted from Hollywood in the 50s during the McCarthy period.
Yeah.
He wrote, there's actually a book called Freedom Road. And he wrote that book. Very, very good film. Our listeners, you know what? You can acquire that film at a video shop. Do yourself a favor. Give yourself a little treat and check that out.
It's a long movie.
Yeah, it's long. But it's interesting and engaging.
I mean, long in a good way.
Oh, no, you know, the industry standard is 90 minutes, man. You go 94 minutes, you got to take a record or something, right?
We are A. We ran A. Be a video about the V O T voting
vote scam.
Yeah, and then the what was that guy's name that wrote that book? Can't remember anymore.
Jim something.
It was 5. It was 5 years before this election that just passed, and he wrote this book, that Vote Scam, which exposed everything. And they showed videos of him and his crew going into these voting places, and the people were just punching out the ballots and sticking them in the thing. And they had it all on videotape, and they're talking to the people. It's like all these like older women, you know, sitting there, kind of smiling and punching the ballots. N, D, under, C, undercover, under C O, no C O, no under C, L, I, Clinton.
You talking about Master Clinton?
Yeah.
We call him Crying Bill Clinton. That's what we like to call him.
About the guy. But that they, that, that, that is Y, G, Gore, couldn't do anything, because he's part of that whole
thing. Guilty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
he's, see, old friends know that one,
right? They're more interested in defending their institution. They know their institutions are deceitful or corrupt. They use those practices all the time. Look at the Supreme Court. You had one of these Supreme Court justices that back in the day in the 60s, one of his role was to fly down to Arizona and try to intimidate people from voting. Now, various activists have come forward and said that they had to set up this an operation to stop these guys' actions from intimidating Latin and black people from voting, going up to them while they're in line. Do you have the right to vote? Are you documented? Are you this and that? And that's not when you're supposed to do these type of things.
No.
You You had Supreme Court justices complain when they thought that Gore won, saying, now I won't be able to retire from the bench because Gore has won, the Democrat has won. All of these contradictions. And in a civilized society with a civilized institution of information, i.e. media center, that reaches the masses, these type of contradictions would have been explored. These type, there would have been hearings. These people would have been called,
dealt with on some level.
But see, they don't want to expose this. They don't want to develop this. They don't want to give a historical background on the longevity of this type of stuff. They don't want to bring in the authors like the one that you said, because people then would start to draw the lines. Instead, what they want to do is chase Clinton around and see, you know,
James Collier.
What?
James Collier.
Collier. They killed him. So what happened was that...
What?
Yeah, shortly after this interview we saw, it was on a public access channel, that's where this tape is from. He took over a major Miami newspaper. He was from Miami. Mm-hmm. And he had plans on the big opening day of having these three stories that were going to expose, like, the whole voting system in Miami.
Like, and mafia corruption and force.
E, X, expose, R, E, N, O.
Oh, Janet Reno.
Oh, Janet Reno. Right.
They had an old thing.
And it was like the day before it was supposed to come to press, he took deathly ill and died. It was like, boom, he just died. And so the paper never happened, you know, the story is never broke and all that stuff.
That was convenient.
Yeah.
But even when they do allow a certain amount of information to leak out about how rotten their politics are and how dishonorable they are as people, an example being the following. Mr. Clarence Thomas, who was a Supreme Court judge, should have and could have recused himself from the decision on the voting in Florida on the following basis. His wife is an employee for the Heritage Foundation. Now, I don't know, you know, brothers and sisters, y'all may not have never heard of the Heritage Foundation. I'm tempted to say don't even look them up. But to tell you what it is, it's an ultra-right-wing think tank. They helped to produce the book The Bell Curve, for instance. And full, just infested with Nazis, and they, you know, they kind of do all these little right-wing, you know, intellectual projects. You know what I mean? And his wife works for them. In fact, her job was helping to coordinate the Republican vote.
She's a consultant.
A consultant, all right. Excuse me. But she was working with the Republicans.
Oh, yeah, with them.
Now, is this somebody that's neutral? In an election, you working, getting paid to hustle votes. Come on, man. How dishonorable can you be? So clear. But where does a worker go that connects the dots on that issue? Where can he turn? You know?
You. If. It. H. A. Happens. In. A. F, Africa, we would U.S. use it as a excuse to G, go in.
And discount the election, even when the elections are legit. Mm. Like when in Angola, Savimbi, the CIA asset, thug, henchman, who, if you read the book In Search of Enemies by Jonathan Stockwell, goes into Savimbi and other people's role within the CIA. He was a high CIA ranking official who worked to destabilize Angola at the time. But when the Angolan government and people finally said to Savimbi, who was constantly raging a war against the population, okay, let's have an election. The UN, other bodies, international bodies came down, They had it. The UN, other international bodies said it was a free and fair election. Savimbi lost. Mm-hmm. What did they do? They ignored it, kept arming Savimbi. Savimbi goes back to war. Mm-hmm. Or you look at Haiti. Haiti had a person, Aristide, who was running under a liberation theology program, which basically people should at least be able to live somewhat like human beings. So we'll have a minimum wage, we'll have a form of social security, child labor laws. Well, Nestle's chocolate, Spalding baseball, Mickey Mouse, who were all over there exploiting the masses of people, were upset about this. But Aristide won. He got 67% of the vote. The candidate that the U.S. backed only got 13%. What was the U.S. response? Well, they started to fund the CIA to help build an opposition group, which in turn ended up being a group called FRAP, a terrorist group led by Emmanuel Constance. So Emmanuel Constance and this terrorist group end up performing a coup and running Aristide out of the country, making it then stable for the U.S. corporations to have their maximum exploitative regime and profit modes back in place. This is the way the U.S. empire works. Now, when you have a situation leading back to the media system where Mickey Mouse, i.e. Disney, owns ABC, well, it's not too much of a surprise when you don't hear this type of information through those networks.
Any type of damn. Well,
so these are the type of contradictions that exist. And now Mickey Mouse owns hundreds of radio broadcasts throughout the country. So they pay off these politicians. The politicians change and sabotage the telecommunication laws and make it therefore even more possible to intensify the gumpification process on the masses of working class people throughout this country.
My F, my friend, J, just, J-I, M, Jim, F, A, L, Jim Fallows, W, wrote a book, a B, O, a book about how J, O, J, O, U, R, journalists, are N O now C O cozy with the government. He wrote the book a bunch of years ago, didn't he? Yeah. He was the editor of
U.S. World News Report.
You got a job, which was a big deal. That somebody like him got this job, and he didn't last long. They booted him pretty quick. He went in there, and he was really thinking, you know, it shouldn't be that way.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we see that when you go against the grain or cross the line, i.e. like Gary Webb, that the punishment, who wrote, you know, did the expose on the Contra CIA LA crack connection, that the punishment is often swift and very vicious. And they want to set a tone to those who cross that line and start to act as if what they pretend the role of the reporter is supposed to be in this country is that it really is that they will, you know, suffer vehemently. So we see that process going on. And as far as the way they help make the whole cozy relationship, amongst other things, besides intimidation, is they give a lot of these little reporters extremely high salaries within the corporate structure. Mm-hmm. you know, the Tom Brokaws and all of that. So they have a cozy relationship.
Yeah.
Because they do these speaking engagements, you know, for right. these governmental institutions right. and other things where they're paid lots of money. So things, they start to see that their role is not like a Daniel Ellsberg who released the Pentagon paper, because you'll be an outcast then. If you want to live, quote unquote, well financially, your role is basically to play the role that they have lined out for you. And many of them admit this. Barbara Walters, she does this little show, amongst her other things, where she has this little regular TV show that comes on. And she ended up basically being a pitch woman for Campbell Soups, where she agreed that she would interweave a Campbell's theme into her show. To the point where they would get the audience to hum things like, yeah, this brings us back to the good old days, you know, when we would eat Campbell's soup and they all go into a jingle like, good, good. So you have that kind of shameless collaboration going on.
I have SPACE space on my BOA board. You could put like a little Campbell suit thing here. Pick up some extra dough.
Frank, you need to quit your mess. The truth of the matter is, that is why it is so important to support alternative media projects like this one, like Berkeley Liberation Radio. Like all of the, you know, with this indie media trip that they got going. I've gotten some good information from them from time to time. You ain't got to worry. We ain't worried about being outcast because we ain't never been in cast.
That's right.
So we know. Right. You understand right. what's going on. And it's important to us to. And I tell you something else. It, you know, yeah, we don't get people throwing stuff at us, money and nothing like that. But every day we get confirmations of what we're saying in the real world. So we know we're on the right track.
That's right.
And eventually, it's a matter of time, they're going to keep on it and they mess with the electricity. Poor person. You know, people don't understand what an attack it is when they raise the price of things like gasoline and electricity. This ain't, you know, come on. This is not a third world country. People walk around barefoot to go to work and... And, you know, it's the sun is so nice, just lay out there all night and sleep out under a palm tree or something. People freeze to death in America. They die. They gave it a name. What do they call that shit? Something about some thermia? Some kind of thermia?
Hypothermia.
Yeah, hypothermia. Make it sound old people freezing to death. They got to give it a fancy name so you don't just say they died because they didn't have no damn heat. Then you look at the situation with the electricity. It's just not realistic. It's one thing to conserve, and I think we, you know, common sense is we should conserve. But workers, brothers and sisters, it's not you. It's not you. Don't believe it's you. Plenty of electricity. And let me tell you something. There's no reason that they don't put solar cells on every single new house that's built. My friend in Concord, Bill Callison, has a house where he paid $25,000 to have this solar unit installed, right? But when you find out how it works, it's actually a very good idea. Because the electricity is generated through solar panels. Then what it does is it goes through some little device that tells PG&E how much electricity you generated. So all he pays, he sells them electricity. His bill, average, $2.
Well, we actually looked into that at one point because we thought, well, we'll just like take out a loan or something. And we were told it would be over $50,000. To do it on our house, and they told us that PG&E doesn't buy it. That if you...
They have to. By law, the bastards. Somebody gave you bad information. Yeah. If it was left to them, obviously, no, they would not.
Yeah.
But there are actually laws on the books that protect your rights in if you have the money, if you can get $50,000.
I mean, we couldn't, you know, $50,000. That's what we were told. Yeah.
They try to discourage you and things
like that.
And when you look at, you know, to go on about the whole media aspect, I mean, the media aspect in connection with the energy and the chauvinism stuff I was referring to earlier, once again, the blueprint of what's going on in California was done in 1998 in Brazil.
Oh, yeah.
Those same companies, Edison and all of little Bush's friends, were over in Brazil, and they leveraged them through the whole IMF, World Bank, structural adjustment process, but they were able to privatize it. Now, Brazil, the energy up 500%. Rolling blackouts are a regular occurrence.
Wow.
So what happens when your information is isolated and it's based off of receiving it from a corporate structure that does not have your best will and intentions at heart? Well, you don't know about that.
That's right.
Then you're told this privatization rhetoric, they'll make it more efficient, more
bring the price down eventually,
and all of that rhetoric. You have these compromised politicians within the bourgeois structure who are just getting paid off
by the power
and then
companies.
They just sock it to you. This is way the process works out.
O, U, our, F, R, friend, Sandy. Yeah, she lives up in Northern California and right by the Oregon border. And her little section has a, what is it called? Like a
co-op.
They did it years ago. And none of their power prices went up at all, yet like right down the street everybody is
well that's
paying.
Where it gets to that it's not an issue of not enough energy.
It's
similar to the food situation. India is the second largest producer of food in the world, but it has millions of people who are starving. It's a distribution issue. That's the issue.
That's
the point. So the same thing is here. In L.A., they're paying 56% less than we are in the Bay Area because it's still under a municipal system.
Mm-hmm.
So
right here.
So we're still in the same state. But see how the corporate media structure intentionally misinforms people because it says California's energy crisis.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't break down the fact that there's pockets within California.
Sacramento.
Palo Alto. L.A. that are within the state. But are not going through the same process that we're going in. That's part of the gumpification stuff that I was referring to earlier.
If, or, they, don't, T, E, tell, us, there, are, N, E, new technology that is about to become available. So Frank was saying that there's he had heard that there was new technology about to become available that would change the way we generate the electricity.
Uh-huh.
And it was right at that point that all of this started happening.
Uh-huh.
Cheap enough for cities groups to have their own source of power and electricity that would decentralize the energy, the electricity generation. They are in a in a rush to be you, build more power plants.
Yeah.
So they can say, well, we have all these power plants. Why invest in this other technology? That's just right. Built this other stuff.
No, I have one more thing on this to show you possible responses and reasons to be optimistic. A firm, American firm called Bechtel, recently bought the water reclamation system in Venezuela. And so people in that country, now you start talking third world, you're talking about people making $2-3 a day, started getting bills for $20 a month for water. They had a general strike. The whole country shut down. And they sent Bechtel back to where they belong. Well, no, not where they belong, but they sent them back on us, back over here. And it just shows you a different... Well, also, I must not... Look, let's be really clear here. That was such a stupid thing for them to do. Those people, backs already against the wall. They don't have no disposable income. So to do something like that, it's going to be civil war before people pay, you know, more money than they have just for water. Just for water. I mean, can you imagine if they defoul the atmosphere so bad we have to walk around with little oxygen tanks? Can you imagine having to buy that from them bastards? And they say, oops, wait a minute, we're going to raise the price on you this week.
Yes.
We're going to deregulate it. Oh, man.
If they do it, G-R-A, gradually, then people might swallow it, go for it.
Oh, Lord.
Well, they're
going to have to fight. But I'll tell you what, some of us ain't going for that. That's just too much.
There is a dichotomy that is happening. They definitely try these things strategically, and on certain portions of populations, they, you know, gradually raise, you know, put more and more pressure on. But one of the things that we're coming to now is that in many ways, the earth is coming to a collapse mode. And see, the earth has been gradually taking abuse, holes in the ozone, oceans destruction. You have a crash in many of the fish species. The Black Sea has collapsed completely. The Mississippi has a dead zone in it that is growing rapidly. Well,
where chemicals are trapped or something?
Well, you know, what you have is what's called Cancer Alley. And this is where all these the petrochemical companies all along the coast of the Mississippi have been dumping all this toxic into the Mississippi for the longest. They pay off politicians so that they don't have proper regulations. Well, the earth can only take so much of that type of abuse before it starts to go into certain forms of collapsing. So what I'm saying is I agree that, of course, you can, it's like the old frog story. If you throw a frog in boiling hot water, it'll jump right out. But if you put it into water that's somewhat cool, and then you just gradually turn up the heat, it'll just sit in there and burn to death. Well, but see, the thing is with the earth, what's happening with the earth is that we have many of the rivers where we get our water supply from, they're collapsing. We have major fish populations collapsing. We have ozone in places like Chile. They have, they're in what they call an orange cold, basically, where on certain days the population can only stay out in the sun with exposed skin for like 7-8 minutes before they can go back in. Well, these type of things will have disastrous consequences on the world population. Say this happens in large farmlands where people can't go out and harvest, or it just starts destroying the food supply at its place. So these capitalists are playing a time bomb game, but what we must do is inform the population of the disaster that is already happening and more that are developing, and head them off at the pass to stave off some of this almost genocidal type of episodes that could happen to large portions of the species population, not just the human population, but it's all interconnected. So the whole species apparatus within the world population.
More bad news. I hate to say this, and I'm not trying to frighten our listeners and the people that view this program.
On a O, other, L, E, on another level, L, no, K, I, kids, R, L, O, losing, the, A, ability, to, play. Yeah, that's what we've been reading this stuff and reporting this stuff about all these studies showing that kids are losing the ability to play because of the way things, like when people have kids now, they don't give them any free time. It's like everything is scheduled and the correlation between the ability to play and smart, and that it's been found that children that play are smarter.
Than people that are overmanaged.
That don't, yeah.
A part of the reason is that when you go out and play, say you're like 9 years old with other kids, you're setting up your own social structure with the kids. You're deciding, okay, if it's going to be a baseball game, where the bases are going to be, how the teams are going to be divided, who you're going to pick for whatever reason strategically. Okay, I'll get him because he's quick. I'll get her because, you know, she's real strong, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But when you have all these parents controlling and manipulating, they're constructing the process of the kid's enjoyment, thereby undermining a very important developmental and critical understanding of how to implement one's thoughts and theories into your immediate world.
Exactly. Even 3-year-olds, they're even doing that with 3-year-olds. What, the hygienist? Is that what you're talking about? Frank's getting his teeth cleaned the other day, and the woman cleaning his teeth is telling us about her 3-year-old kid who likes to play and run and touch other kids. Well, the teacher got so alarmed, she called in government people to look at this kid. And so the government people then tell the parents that it's not a problem now, but it's going to be. And they're scaring them. They're telling them the kid's going to have all these mental problems if they don't put the kid into play therapy. So this woman goes for it. She puts this 4-year-old kid into play therapy.
Oh, no.
So it's this big room of toys. And the shrink is standing there, or the occupational therapist, with the parents, explaining to them everything the kid does, what that means, and how that's right, and how that's wrong, and all this stuff.
Now, this is bullshit.
See, that's a crime right there.
That's a crime.
And also some jive-ass psychologists giving themselves some work.
Right. And also, that's where all that whole Ritalin and all of that poison ends up coming
out. Oh, man, y'all getting me mad talking about that Ritalin.
Also, an aspect of creating a structure where the kid starts to conform early because he gets used to established figures telling them how to think and live, et cetera.
They're told, don't think.
Right. But, like, that goes into, like, recently there was a 15-year-old teenager. He was told that there was an assembly at his school and that everyone had to go because, you know, it was part of the whole school apparatus. But when he goes into the gymnasium, he sees it's a big Ronald McDonald fanfare thing where it's a whole recruitment thing for Ronald McDonald at his high school. And then they're having these mock things where you're going up for an interview. So they're already socializing kids. So then he decides he's going to go for the mock. So the person says, well, why do you want to work at McDonald's? And he says, I don't want to work at McDonald's. And he goes, you don't? And he goes, no, because they feed people junk food that's not healthy for them. And they told Hindus that The French fries did not have any type of beef ingredients because Hindus don't eat beef product, and it turns out that it does. So right then, what happens? The principal says, all right, out, go to the office. He ends up going in the office. Then he's compelled to write an apology to McDonald's. And then he's told to say an apology to the over the speaker, over the intercom, to his school about how he's a bad student and so on and so forth. This is breaking the will and the spirit of a teenager so that he
becomes, an intelligent little fucker.
Right, yeah. who had read the material, had heard about Eric Schloss's book, Fast Food Nation, and it turns out that in India right now there's mass protests.
Yeah, because they found out they did have beef in the streets.
And they're forcing them, or actually they just want them to close it down right now. McDonald's is, you know, Ronald's tap dancing around, trying to work it out and stuff, and say, and spin words around, like, well, we didn't mean that, but we really meant that, you know, all this type of junk. But to get to the point, McDonald's has conceded that they do have beef product in their French fries. So the student was right. He has a critique and an argument which can be verified and backed up, and that's what he's really being punished for. Right.
That's a shame.
Doesn't matter. 1984. It's right out of the book.
Yeah, yeah.
1984.
Oh, yeah. Right, right. Oh, yeah. Well, when you look at, like, in Texas, there was a high school that passed, if you wanted to be an athlete, you had to pass an urine test. If you wanted to be a cheerleader, you had to pass a virgin test. At a lot of the inner city schools, you can't wear braids. You can't wear hair extensions. You can't wear, you can't color your hair. So all various forms of self-expression, which they come up with or deem something as being too independent to the outline that they want to subscribe to you, are being attacked, and you are being punished if you go outside of that. Coca-Cola had a thing where they bought off the school or bought off the principal, and they say, okay, look, we'll put a little, we'll give you some money and buy a scoreboard, but for that, we want Coca-Cola machines. So the principal tap danced around and said, okay, we'll do that. And then they had a Coke day at the school where everyone was supposed to go running around, you know, cheering Coke. Well, one independent, I know. So one independent thinking student, you know, being a little smart ass, he wore a Pepsi t-shirt. Boom!
They put the SWAT team on it.
Oh, suspended. My God.
They put the SWAT team on his chest.
So he gets suspended for a couple of days.
I'm sure they sued, though.
For that action. And once again, that goes back to that whole gumpification, beat down, demoralization process. And it also gives insight to the role of the corporate media and how they choose what is important to cover and what is not important.
That's right. I just wanted to share, look, a couple of things. When I was talking about before, more bad news, because we were talking about the, we had a little stream of consciousness going on, the ecology, and I just wanted to share this. And this is not no way out radical, I mean, this is on KQED, where they say that the snow cap on the Sierra Nevada, because of global warming, is not going to maintain itself and then slowly melt away as spring approaches. And then, you know, and finally, you know, the water just, in a very, nature is a magnificent phenomena. It just, the nature's plan is sometimes just absolutely, you know, I mean, because what's going to happen now is when it rains, it doesn't turn to snow. All the water is just going to come down at one time. So you're going to have flooding and drought. Because when all the water comes down at once, it's not slowly coming down during the course of the year. Later on in the year, it's going to run out of water altogether. That's not me. That's not me. It's not my KQED. About as, you know, respectable.
Yeah.
But you know, one more thing. On this thing, he was talking about the kids. They did something like this in Oakland. I want people. I think we reported this on Slave Revolt. The youngsters, similar thing in the black community, where the youngsters were supposed to vote for who they wanted to be their commencement speaker. So the kids voted for Mumia Abdul-Jamal. Now this idiot, the principal, says, I want you to take some civic duty here. Let's come forward and participate and all this old stuff. And they voted for Mumia. He said, well, wait a minute.
So what he did
is that we didn't have enough Latinos offered on, so we're going to vote again. They voted again. The old bastards voted for Mumia again. So now, I mean, it gets worse. But how do you justify that kind of stuff? He then asked some preacher to come and speak, and the kids got to him. And eventually, Mumia's speech was actually played. But it's the disrespect that you teach young people. You want to know why kids may seem to be a little out of it, a little disrespect. I can understand it, if that's the way they live it. And that's just on a big issue that got in the papers. Right. Every day, they're disrespecting humanity like that in our schools.
And this is a kingfish process that principal is playing, and that's why he's in that position. But when you look at that contradiction within, you have that going on, and then about a month before, you had the Merritt College situation where the students voted to honor Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale, and then once again the administration went on the attack and tried to abort that. Now this is all in the same time that in West Oakland you have these Knight Rider Gestapo cops running around planting drugs, assassinating black people within the West Oakland community, and then they're going to wonder why, quote unquote, you have people trying to give respect to the very same type of people who came out and resisted what the police in West Oakland are being on trial for.
It, Jay, you, it just, P, R, O, proves that there. No, it just proves there. W, A, R, their war will not win. W, work. It just proves their war will not work. The kids. Are not buying it.
Well, that's why they're trying to train them now. And if you can wear them out, and then if there's no real strong social movement, no independent groups by the time they start to come of age, and then they start having families and other things, then they'll just kind of
go along to get along.
Just slide. But if we do have these institutions and develop them like we plan on doing, and then there is a place for them to develop and hone in their skills attached to different types of fighting class combat entities, well then it's the world for the taking.
That's right.
They T R I tried it in the 50s.
Explain what you mean by that.
Three, zero, 30 were R, A, D, I, the 30s were radical.
Okay.
The 1930s were radical. The W, A, R, the war.
World War II.
P, U, put A, C, A, cap on that, but it a Al, but it also L I B E R A liberated W women who H A who had to W
work
who had to work. So, after the war, they were the very A F afraid it would get O U out of
control.
Hand.
Yes.
So they G and they F O focused on the C O M M U N communication.
No, Communist Party.
Communist Party. And
McCarthyism.
Mm-hmm. And T R tried to P U push M A T E R materialism. How G R E A how great the K I T the kitchen could be. How great S U suburbia can be. How great C A R cars are. C A N N E canned food. N A S A NASA. It did not work. It did not work. The 60s followed.
Right. Actually, though, you know, I would just substitute when you use the term materialism, Frank, I would call it conspicuous consumption. Because
yes.
If there was a basis for that type of wealth, the United States came in the tail end of the war. The war started in 1939. The United States waited till everybody cut everybody up, blew everybody up, and then eased on in there and snatched all the, you know, the goodies. So, the United States was producing 90% of the world's manufactured products right after the war for a period. Europe was devastated, you know?
Yes.
But that is the hope, the young people. Because they said, and y'all gonna act the way we want y'all to act. Not, y'all not gonna listen to that devil Negro communist music. That shit didn't work there, boy. Everybody likes to get on Elvis Presley, shake his little moneymaker. It's true. It's true. And that rock and roll took off, and not only the rock, as the civil rights movement was growing, a sense of the importance of being able, of black people being able to be involved in the production level of creating new music became a reality. And Barry Gordy started his Motown. And a few other, you know, labels got started that were quite successful and produced artists that will never be forgotten. So that, no, they just shit didn't work. Because it was, and mainly they got bad musical taste.
B E A T, the Beats. And the Beats showed up and started talking about the stuff they talked about.
Mm-hmm. And plus, in capitalism, you always have contradictions. There's always contradictions that explode out. So while it's running around the planet during the 50s and 60s talking about it's the great democracy, you had people like Robert F. Williams, Malcolm, fighting for basic human rights and exposing to the world these type of contradictions. This shook up many young white people who had believed. And then the next thing they know, they get thrust into this war called Vietnam. And many of them start to see all types of contradictions within that and the role of U.S. as a so-called liberator. Many of the people who had initially gone down to smash up Vietnam, this taking place right after World War II in 1945, when you had soldiers who went on like a little mutiny because right after World War II, they were shipped to Vietnam. They're greeted by German soldiers who salute them on the docks of Hanoi, salute them, and they're carrying French mercenaries. So many of these U.S. soldiers are like, what's going on? And there was no such thing as two Vietnams then. There was no division, quote-unquote, between North and South. The United States' role was to go back there and recolonialize Vietnam. So these seeds start to permeate, and these contradictions were set right then. And they started to sprout and explode during the 50s and 60s. Well, many of the seeds that are being planted now and have been planted within the last 10 years, they could be exploding 5-10 years from now. Who knows what contradictions may explode out in areas like Iraq. That may end up, you know, with if the process keeps going on, 5,000 kids keep dying. Saddam, the whole population is demonized as one big Saddam. The whole Israeli Palestinian conflict and contradictions keep exploding out. Who knows where those seeds may explode out 10 years from now. So this is how capitalism, in the process of capital imperialist modes of operation, plant seeds of contradictions that can have explosions that can be mind-blowing down the road.
And before, after, before we were in on the before we were on the air, you were talking about that they gunned down was it Gerald that was saying
New Guinea?
Papua New Guinea.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, tell us about that again.
Oh, okay.
We weren't on the air for that.
Okay, when I was fortunate enough to go to Seattle in 1999 November, and I'll be very honest. At the time I went, I knew very little about what it was about, what was going on. But on the ride up there, the 18-hour ride up there, I guess I got a little bit of an education. And actually, Tracy was there too. So we got up there, and there had been a real attempt to bring together the trade union bureaucracy along with social reformers and environmentalists to have a peaceful protest about the negative role that the World Trade Organization plays mostly in other countries, and how they drive down the living standards in the third world, and people aren't blah, 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 blah. So I said, all right, let me see. But one little group of those youth, one little, probably 1,000 of them, probably more than 10,000 of them, had decided they were going to lock arms to prevent the WTO delegates from attending the meeting. And I don't think, to tell you the truth, that the big boys in Seattle took these youngsters seriously. Mm-hmm. But they actually did it. And when they did it, the whole thing just kind of came apart. All of the civility and the, you know, the kind of just, you know, looked like things were going to run pretty smoothly. It just came apart. Police started attacking people, tear gassing, beating people. It was just a mess. And we've seen several afterwards. In April 16th, you had the World Bank thing. And all over the world, there's been, Quebec, there have been actions. Barcelona, and was that Czechoslovakia, Sweden, England. There have been these globalization demonstrations. Now, these nations that I'm describing now, some people would call them first world, but let's call them developed capitalist, not Czechoslovakia, but the developed capitalist countries for the most part. But see, who is it that really gets hurt by this World Bank stuff are the third world countries. Simple example, and I'll try to keep this one brief because I want to just talk about the Papua New Guinea question. In Zambia, the World Bank comes in, they loan money to the government, they say, listen, you need money, but we ain't no bank blank checks, we ain't just going to give you this money. You have to reform. It may have changed the whole context and meaning of the word reform. And what it meant to them is you have to close down the damn clinics, the free clinics that existed out in the rural areas, which they did. They closed them down. What was the immediate consequence of stuff like this? The story I read in a South African newspaper was about a child who contracted malaria. You can actually be treated for malaria if you get help soon enough. Well, these people lived out in a rural area. They didn't have a lot of money. They didn't have a vehicle. 30 miles from town. When you're 30 miles from town, see, we don't think 30 miles, I hop in my little Volkswagen, I'll be there in 15 minutes. Well, the problem is these people had to walk, but before they walked, they wanted to raise the funds. They had to go to their family and get the money together, and then they got to walk it. By the time they got the child to a doctor in the city in Zambia, it probably a month had taken place. You try walking 30 miles with a sick kid. Yeah, I could see it taking a month. The child died. But here's the question. How much was the shot for malaria? How much did it cost? Well, as they say, 3 pence in an American money, that is 6 cents. That child died and probably thousands of others over 6 cents. This is very serious in the third world. So they approached these people in New Guinea, see, Papua, say the word right for
Papua?
Papua New Guinea, and they said, look, y'all don't know how to run no damn government. We know how to run government. So we're going to tell you how to run your business. You're going to have to privatize all of this stuff because it's nothing but corruption. And to be sure, there probably is some corruption. But the students, they understood the danger here, you see, to their economy, to their way of life, their culture, to the health of their people. So the students got to organizing, and basically what they did was had a demonstration there against the World Bank and the IMF, like the other demonstrations that have occurred in other parts of the country, of the world, that I discussed earlier. Only this time, you see, the little comprador bourgeois, they don't really produce very much. What they do is they play the role of a middleman between imperialism and the oppressed colonial masses. That's more the actual social function that they play. They're not an organizing class like the early bourgeoisie that develops production. No, they want to pimp off of it. They want to get the foreign aid and then buy their little Mercedes. Anybody with a Mercedes in a country like that should be shot on the spot. On the spot. And I'm not against people having nice things. But you can only get a Mercedes in Africa and countries like New Guinea if you pimp it off of the people. Because you sure didn't work for the damn money. So what happens is these young people, college students, are protesting, demanding that the World Bank stay out of their business, that they're that their elected officials be allowed to decide what the national priorities are, et cetera, et cetera. And they were set upon and shot by the army. And approximately 60 of them were shot. A number of them had to go into the hospital. And my understanding is, the last time I just read this stuff from in the media, 3 of them died. So we now have definite martyrs in the struggle against capitalist globalization. This is a tragedy.
That will radically radicalize people fast if they hear about it.
Oh, Lord, tell me. That's the problem. That's why I value programs like this one and all other independent attempts to try to get as much of the truth as we can to the American people. This is really tragic, but you know.
And also, it's a situation where, see, the American population and world populations, they know that if people just hear one little snippet on it or a sound bite, or even hear it very descriptively one time, that's often not enough. Mm-hmm. It has to be repeated. Mm. And then people have to develop a more theorized way of looking at this and connecting it to other things. Because in many ways, what's gone on in New Guinea is similar to what has been going on throughout Latin America in the form of the Nikeification, you know, Nike, Levi Strauss, and all of that. This is why they have a school of the Americas. This is why they send people like Manuel Noriega and Banzir Suarez and all of these Latin American henchmen to learn the art of torture and all this training to suppress the population so that they can go back to their populations, suppress them, beat them down, make them docile and depleted and demoralized so that Nike and Levi Strauss and Kathy Gifford and all of them can come in and exploit them for 20 cents an hour. So once you have a situation that is set up like that, where you have these guys basically being operatives in for financial capital, and they're armed by these institutions within the American capitalist system, they're financed through that. They get their payoff for playing their role, so that when corporations want to then say, okay, we have enough control over that part of the industry, we want to privatize more of it, we want to build unnecessary dams, etc. Well, the population is already beaten down, and the World Bank and IMF can just slide on in and help in that whole privatization process. So this battle has been going on for a long time. The School of the Americas has existed for over 50 years now. They do this training right out of Georgia. And it's long. I mean, it's kind of hypocritical. Oh, it's kind of fascinating that when you name off Latin America's greatest henchmen and murderers,
they all went to the School of America.
And some of them, like Noriega, who's now in prison in the U.S., was one of the graduates from there. So this shows the contradictions, but also the role of the U.S. and how it sets up mechanisms to penetrate and blast away on working populations throughout the world.
N-I-G-G. A nigger? Am I a nigger? You're asking if you are?
You about as close to one as I've seen.
Well, I mean, if you put it like in a class aspect, the whole concept of the color class slave system, the concept of what, you know, that meant, and in the ruling classes, what being a nigga is, it means being dispossessed, not being in power, not being able to control your standard of living, not being able to control your labor, not being able to control, along with other people, the environment in which you live in. Well, in many ways, what you see now taking place is the negrification of America. This is why often in many countries like South Africa and stuff like that, many of the oppressed people, East Indians and so on and so forth, they get it. They just call themselves black.
England also.
Because they see what that means in the class
social
perspective.
Sense, right.
So,
That is the key. The key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it's just race is a definitely a social phenomenon. It is not a biological phenomenon, and it's probably one of the most important
like
aspects for control in this society.
Like Crip, like being a Crip. When people think when people think P-O-O-O, them poor be black people. It is a SHA. It's a shame how they are being treated. We should we should help them. Mrs. The point. We are niggers. We are niggers.
Right. Well, what he's saying basically is like when you look at in the name of a war on drugs, which of course basically means in reality a war on black. Well, many blacks were realizing what was going on, and one of their uses of attack on black people was what they called asset forfeitures. So they would charge your property, charge your home with a crime. You wouldn't be able to defend yourself. They'd take your home, make you homeless and stuff. Well, many people who were of other shades, other complexions, didn't see themselves as being black, i.e. connected with that group of people.
That's what it is.
So what ended up happening is that you may not think it, but the ruling class did. So after a while, the police started to get a certain portion of the money of these asset forfeitures.
For their own organization.
You know, so this is how they were driving around in new cars, things of that nature. So quite naturally for them, you know, they just didn't want to pick on just the poor blacks, quote unquote.
What are you gonna get?
They wanted to get some of the more richer blacks and stuff. So they started going past the flatlands in East Oakland and West Oakland and into the Oakland Hills to get the lighter-skinned Negroes, the lighter-skinned blacks, some of the people who call themselves different, i.e. white folks, and started to use asset forfeiture on them. You had situations where one guy who was fairly wealthy, this one DEA agent said that he saw marijuana plants hanging from his tree, and they used it as an excuse to then bust into his home. He hears people busting into his home. He goes to check it out. They end up shooting him down.
In his house.
Well, it ended up turning out that the DEA actually wanted his house because of his worth. So they concocted this whole thing.
And took the house, by the way, and was living in it.
There were no marijuana plants. There was no, anything like that whatsoever. So, and this guy did not call himself a nigga at the time. Now that he got, when he saw that gun pointed at him by the DEA agents, he probably did realize that he was a nigga in the eyes of Sam, just like Amadou Diallo did, because it was basically the same type of situation. Death was headed towards his way. But this is how, where many people may not see themselves as being connected or the same as those other people down the way, but how you may perceive yourself in this world is often not the way that those in power see it.
And is subject to change.
And in five years, you will be the TA, the target. In 5 years, you will be the target. S, so it, A, it ain't, A, about, H, E, L, L, P, it ain't about helping T, those poor blacks.
Well, like, once again, that it just goes down to what Frank is basically saying, that we have to realize that we're helping ourselves, and that there's a basic common thread in unity amongst us who are considered the rabble. By this elite class that are here just to exploit us. Now, they use various mechanisms to divide us, but when you think about it, the only reason why they would use those mechanisms to divide us is if they really think of us in that way. If you have a situation where they have intentionally blocked any effort whatsoever on treating all of the soldiers who have gotten the Gulf War syndrome, and it's been over 70,000, then it's clear they look at all of them as niggas. Mm-hmm. Whether you white.
We don't care about all their rhetoric. We talk about how
they treat
people.
Asian, Latino, to them, and Schwarzkopf included. What's his face? The Negro that's up there.
Powell
included. They all think of us as niggas. Disposable. They serve their purpose. They're used up. Next batch, come on in. That's the reality that needs to be understood.
Mm-hmm. B. U. Bush. B-U-S. B-U-S-N. No, B-U-S, business schools teach you that you're going to make all your money from 20% of the people that you do business with, and so the other 80% you don't have to pay too much attention to.
Or you don't have to value them as human beings.
Yes.
That's the problem.
Yes.
That's the problem right there.
That is why they L-O-C lock. What was it? Lock us up. Oh, in jails. K I L kill us. I G ignore us. They think they would be better off with 80%. They think they would be better off with 80% OU out of circulation.
But also, it works as a mechanism of, you know, when they're locking people up, it's not just to quote-unquote lock those people up. It's also to disprise and alienate and terrify the population that is quote-unquote not locked up. Because if they can sterilize you and intimidate you that way, then you'll be in line not to rebel. You'll be scared. You'll be ready to conform to the policies that they lay out at hand, even if it's dramatically against your interests. So part of the whole process of the locking up and the terror campaigns that they use to assassinate portions of the population in brutal ways is basically to intimidate the population in general. When you look back at the lynching days, much of the lynching that went on, look at how it often worked. They would get someone, they take pictures of them, they make sure that the corpse was left out there, they make postcards out of it. This was for other blacks to see. So it wasn't just the black who was killed, it was for those blacks who were living that, look, you better stay in check with our social order.
For these people do this and get away with it.
And there won't be any repercussions on the mobs of us that do this terror campaign.
We are a ran the P O L I T political P R I S prisoners. Oh, the political prisoners conference. Yeah. What is D.A. dangerous about that was the L, the love, and the K, the I D E A ideology, no, idealism, the love and the idealism, and the S O soft, the softness that would be extremely dangerous if people saw that. if the general population saw that. Because, you know, people, their picture of the people in jail, you know, and then you see something like that, and these people are so kind and loving and idealistic.
That's that whole, you know, they intentionally dehumanize prisoners in general.
Yes.
And they want to tell you that they're monsters. Then they put out all of these little gung-ho cop shows and movies and stuff like that to create these Hannibal Lecter-type characters and imagery within your mind.
Boy.
Have you terrified in your own community? So many
in your
people,
own house.
So many people who think they know a Mumia have no idea of his passion, commitment, and humanitarian nature as a human being. They have no idea. But what they do know is the imagery that these little henchmen portray Mumia as, and they use words cop killer, former Black Panther, all these little words that already have negative connotation in their minds. So a Mumia, to many people, is not really that much different in their minds than this saying of Timothy McVeigh. So they want to strip you up, and then they want to turn around, like in California, and if you want to go and interview a prisoner, so you can help develop and have that person develop his or her own character about themselves, you can no longer, as a reporter, pick a particular prisoner you want to go and converse with. It's random now. So they strip that away.
When did that happen?
The last few years.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they use it when they want. So if it's like an articulate, you know, prisoner who is on death row, knowledgeable about death row, can break down some of the social conditionings about the death row system and structure within California and this country and connect it with other things that are going on. The old warden can say, oh, no, you can't see him. See, this is part of the dehumanization process.
B.E. Because that they're their L-I-E, their lie is V-E, very fragile.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt about it.
Oh, yeah.
And they know it's fragile, and they're scared. They're scared to death.
That's one thing that kind of disturbs me about all people that, you know, that say that they want to put up the fact. They don't realize how weak our enemies actually are. Because they have very little going for them in terms of information, truth, you know, morality. Things like this matter to most people. They got little, and they have to avoid. They don't want to engage. I'll never forget this. When the teacher decided to have the teach-in in the Oakland schools for Mumia, I want to be very honest with you and say that I didn't, you know, I said, okay, that'd be good, get the children involved. I was enthusiastic in a certain sense, but I didn't think it was that big a deal. They made it a big deal. What they did was some cop had got killed, and then they said to us, they said, well, you don't think you should have this thing on a cop killer right, you know, after the funeral. Number one, Mumia Abdul-Jamal is not a cop killer. He didn't kill nobody. In fact, and this is sad but true, we just got new information where a gentleman by the name of Arnold Beverly has come forward and admitted that he shot Faulkner. This is pure dynamite. A lot of people like to say to me, well, why would he do it like that? Because, you know, people can't conceive of ever doing the right thing. But let me tell you, people do have a conscience. They go, this guy was in prison after Mumia was already, you know, put on death row. And he was in prison with Moon prisoners. And just by observing their behavior under fire, he came to develop a lot of respect for what they stood for. And he just yawned away at them for years and years. But nevertheless, what matters to me is I'm not a psychologist. I can't answer all questions of human motivation. But I do know they took him to the best lie detector test administrator in the country. And he passed that lie detector test, and there's 80 pages of documentation explaining how the lie detector test works and blah, 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 and why the guy, I think his name is, Hunt from Boise, Idaho, why he thinks that, this is valid in this particular case. This is a whole new day. Media doesn't, they won't talk about this. They don't want this in the paper. Because then you don't have to be a brain surgeon to see. Well, if they got a guy that says he did it and he passed the lie detector test, why is Mumia Abdul-Jamal in prison at all? Let alone death row. And it's clear they just don't have no intention of letting this man. They want to kill him.
And this is all political. And this is actually not the first time that someone has come forward about these type of murdering someone in the past. These Northwestern University students had uncovered a case about where someone had been in prison for like 18 years, wrongly convicted on death row. And they ended up tracking down these journalism students at this university, the person who did it. The person admitted it, he admitted it on video camera. He gave it to the various authorities. Then they let the person out who was in prison and went ahead and, convicted the person who did admit it. My whole point is that this is nothing new. Sometimes people over time, guilt, whatever happens. But my point is that the authorities have accepted it before when someone has admitted it. But see, Mumia's situation is much more political because they have built a whole case
of lies
on it. They have followed a whole program and had people testify and say these particular things to orchestrate Mumia's death. And that gets back to the heart of the issue of a political prisoner.
They're all involved.
Mumia's innocence, in essence, as a political prisoner, is just a technicality. It's a technicality to overcome, a technicality to distort, to lie about, to deceive, because at the end of the day, for them, Mumia must die. And this gets to the heart of the true morality and intentions of the state.
Sick!
That has always been the CA case.
Well, when you look at the part of the founding of this country, in the 1800s, mid-1800s, the capitalists plunged the America into one of its vicious depressions. Various news reports came out, Bismarck Tribune talking about the vicious and greedy bankers, railroad owners, capitalists have plunged our nation into its worst depression. Our people are starving, etc., etc. But what was the response? The response was, now we have no choice. We must go into the Black Hills and break our treaty that we had with Red Cloud and plunge the Black Hills of its gold, which is exactly what they did. So here they admit that it was the capitalists that caused all of this economic turmoil, but the response was to turn their aggression on the original inhabitants of this country and strip them of their rights and basically lives. And soon enough, old Custer, old Armstrong himself, was leading an expedition into the Black Hills with Crazy Horse, Red Cloud, Two Moon, Touch the Clouds, Gaul, getting ready to make amends for that, which they did. But that's another story. But that shows you the how the whole process of this country has always worked.
But no, why are they L E T T I letting us do this?
Well, first of all, they're not letting us do it. We're doing it in spite of many things that, you know, they have set up, especially, you know, against the whole guerrilla pirate radio movement and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But also, there's a situation where they are monitoring all of this. We get all types of information and have information, and other things that we've done, we know that they monitor all this. But there's also a thing where they're experts at sabotage and things of that nature. They look for ways to create infighting. But also, what they do is they don't want to unnecessarily, quote-unquote, create like a martyr situation where if they all of a sudden start to jump out before the masses have really started to engage in the whole process, you can have people looking over at why are they so viciously attacking those institutions. All they're doing is this, you know,
sharing information.
Yeah, they're doing it independently. They're not asking the government for quote unquote money. They're not asking for corporate handouts, so on and so forth. So they know about what we're doing. They monitor what we're doing, and they have various consultants and people like that who tell them when is the best time to turn up the heat, when is the not. So, like, take the Independent Media Center. They've been watching them all along. They've monitored them. Now, during certain episodes, they said, okay, nah, we ain't going for it. Like in L.A., that's where they drew the line when they were going to do that thing at the convention in L.A. They said, look, too many people are watching this stuff, and they're growing pretty fast, so on and so forth, and this is revolving around a hot issue, the whole convention, and they're coming off the heels of some other successful events, so we're just going to hoo-ride and sabotage this whole thing. So they did shut that down at that moment. So they do pick their spots and stuff, and they'll be back for more before all is said and done.
But I think what's very important to realize, because I'm sorry, folks, but I'm going to have to hit the road here. Unfortunately, there's no cats. You know, I try to be cool, but I got a bad health problem. But see, this is what they don't have absolute power over you. Oh man, I want our listeners to understand this. They can't control the way you think. Really, at the end of the day, it's your mind. Yes, they control the airwaves, for the majority of the airwaves and stuff, but they can't stop you from talking to your family. They can't stop you from thinking and reading and sharing information with your fellow workers at work, the people you go to school with. At the end of the day, they are in big trouble, and they know it. See, they don't want to talk about, well, what's wrong with Russia and all. Remember, I mean, it was drilled into me as a child. The communists, they don't have freedom of speech like we do in this great country. Except if you ain't got no damn money. See? That's right. And that, once again, I cannot emphasize it enough. That is why shows like this matter. It is important that we begin to develop a support system for all independent media to make sure, because the corporate media is not ours. They're not our friends. They don't speak for us. They don't tell our stories. We must support and nurture independent media outlets if we are going to be able to effectively resist all of the attacks that they throwing at us, y'all.
And part of our support system is a core part of our strength. This is what helps hold them at bay. I mean, if you think about it, if you had Frederick Douglass running around in the 1800s with a North Star paper, here's someone, a black person, a former slave, and he has a paper running around, talking about the horrors of slavery and making strong analysis and pronouncements against the U.S. government and its policy, one would think, well, why didn't they just go ahead and shut him down, kill him? That's because he had strong support. He had a basis of support. That support, when it's based in truth, when it's based in conviction, that's trying to uncover honestly the facts, is like the sun. And when you're a vampire, which the capitalist state is, you don't want all that sunshine. Because you want to hide in the dark and do your little thing. Hope that one person or those entities that are out there are just walking around in the dark by themselves too. That they're not out in public. That they don't have a strong base of support. Because that base of support symbolizes the sun. And that is what scares them away. They have to be much more cautious, I should say, when you have that type of support around you.
Mm-hmm. And it is growing. We are getting support.
This SH, this show, is AMAL almost 3 years old. L. Lover is a L almost will be two and a half years old. Yeah. S. So P. People can do it.
Mm-hmm.
It don't take a lot of money. You don't need millions of L listeners to make a difference.
Right. Well, you also.
That's true.
It comes down to like your sense of priorities and stuff. And in many ways, you can't base, if you're doing the type of stuff that we're doing, you can't base your type of values off of how the bourgeois bases it.
That's
because
right.
For us, it's not about money. It's not about being a millionaire and all of that type of stuff. But see, if you have that type of concept and that's how you value quote unquote success, if that's how you value what is valuable, then you are
caught up
and cocooned within that system and in that mindset, and then they got you beat, because then they'll have you thinking, well, okay, well, what we're doing is insignificant.
That's right, because there are millions of people listening to these.
That is their M A main weapon against
us. The mind game.
That's what we come up against.
We're brothers and sisters.
Know, people saying, yeah, but how many people are really listening to what you're doing?
Oh, yeah.
Well, by the same thing, it's a process. It's a process.
That's right. It's growing.
When Kenteco first started the whole thing, there was just people within that little project who were listening to him. From there, we started the thing at FRB. We had an engineer, Steve Dunifer, who was technically advanced. He was able to create stronger transmitters. From that process, we were able to get a larger portion of Berkeley and Oakland. From there, it caught into the minds of other people. We started making transmitters for other people throughout the country. We have two in Haiti. couple in South Africa, East Timor,
San Salvador.
Is that important to them? Was it important to the people, the Zapatistas, when we gave them one? Of course it was, because they understood the value. Now, a few years back, this wasn't even in our minds that it would expand that way. It starts off with an idea and a conviction that what you're doing is right and you believe in, and that you have, you too have something to say and contribute to this society in a way that you think has some value. Not based off of what they think, but what you believe in, your understanding of the world. Yes. From there, that helps set the seed and the foundation for what's to come.
That is P. Oh, power, that is power.
That
is power.
That's the true power of what we're trying.
The birth of our power.
Right. It comes from a very organic and honest tradition of what you, Fred Douglas, and I, you know, so slave revolt come from that tradition of the North Star tradition that Fred Douglas had built, where he had escaped from slavery, just like Harriet. But that wasn't enough for him. He believed that true freedom was not just his freedom, but freedom for people who were locked within that type of system. So off of that idea, he began to argue and develop and write and orchestrate a platform for that. And then it worked itself into the printing press and his publication known as the North Star. And at the end of the day, through his development and analysis, it ended up 200,000 plus black soldiers fighting in the Civil War, which crushed chattel slavery. That was the end result of the idea that Fred Douglas had.
If he thought in K, in N, in numbers, he would have never done what he did.
I'm overwhelmed.
Nobody's really listening.
Right, I'm just one escaped slave.
Right.
This institution's been going on for years, so on and so forth. But he developed his understanding. He developed his conviction. So who are we? Here, Frederick Douglass, an escaped slave, was able to make a fundamental role change and advancement in the crushing of chattel slavery. And then here we are in the year 2001. We have no excuse whatsoever, but to say if Fred and Harry and them can contribute in the crushing of chattel slavery then, and we can contribute to the crushing of this wage slave system. We're part of the same tradition, the same legacy. So, and we have technology that can be used in a way that Fred can only dream of back then. So let's get to work.
That's it. Now, having said that, though, we got to cut.
Out of here.
We got to cut, y'all. Man.
Okay.
That was
right.
It.
G.
That was
L. A. Glad. U. L. O. O. Look. At, I'm glad you looked at me. Well, we had a guest on a couple of weeks ago. I won't say his name, right? But he does a show on Lover, and somebody that, again, like we listened to his show and really liked his show and the way he thought. And then he came on the show and he was completely freaked by Frank. He would not look at Frank. Even though Frank was the one like this where Frank's the one talking to him. He wouldn't look at Frank.
Oh, forget it.
Well, I don't know what he's talking about, because the horrible sight that I see is Bush.
Yeah.
It's, these CEOs at PG&E and stuff like that. That's the horrible sight that I see around.
Yeah.
So I don't know what this cat's problem
is.
No,
that's just limited. That's weak. That's just weak humanity.
Yes.
Frank is an inspiration in many ways. Just as Tracy said, if Frederick Douglass can do it. And Frank, I look at Frank and I say, well, goddamn, I'm like, get up, let's go.
You
keep fighting.
Can.
Oh, shoot.
You can hear Gerald and Tracy on Lover every
Thursday night, 11 p.m.
11 p.m. Slave Revolt. That's Pacific time. So look at the schedule if you're not Pacific. And G. Gerald provides the stuff for
Radical Perspectives.
Radical Perspectives, which is always also on Thursdays
5 p.m.
at 5 p.m. Pacific. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's it. They're going to have Byrne singing Fuck the War. And then Susie Block comes on at 11 p.m., followed by Playing with Passion. This is Love Underground.
Then you've been listening to two. Ooh, a lot of me. There's an echo. Anyway, you've been listening to Frank Moore's Shaman's Den program. And that was from not too long ago. Let me just check the date on the tape here. That was Gerald Smith and Tracy James, who do the Slave Remote Radio Show here on Lover every Thursday night at 11 p.m. And that was recorded earlier this year on June 1st. And if you have never heard Slave Remote Radio, you should check it out. It's an amazing program, and it's a real refreshing point of view from what the mainstream spoons out around here. So check it out. And coming up in a little less than an hour, Frank Moore's Shaman's Den tonight, live. Special guest, Sean Childress, who's an art therapist. So she'll be coming up in a little less than an hour. Right now we're going to return to the mix. Your player's going to stop. You got to hit play again. Oh, the ground is ready.